session will be a bit different from the previous one, because I'm finished, my barking phase is finished, I feel cool, and also because I decided, I didn't decide anything, actually, Vilya asked me to make a tutorial on a method that has been developed 40 years ago, and that allows to model the dynamics of regulatory networks. And so this is somehow well related to the topics of the whole conference, because one big question is how do you understand the behavior of a network as a whole, network of molecular interactions, but it could be any other type of network of interactions, as a function of the combinations of all the elements and all the interactions of these elements. So, actually, what I will do is even much more precise than this, because as the title indicates, I will only show one method, and I'm not a modeler. I used to do this, I will explain you why. But so this is the only method that I know. I know it quite well, but it's the only one. So I'm not an expert in the general field of modeling. I don't use differential equations, so I warn you, because I wouldn't like for you to think that I'm saying that I'm an expert. I'm not an expert. But this method, nevertheless, presents several advantages, and it can be used very simply. And despite its simplicity, it is also a method that allows you to really go to some depth in the understanding of the behavior of networks. So the second warning is that this is a tutorial, and I tried to do it in a real tutorial way. So I asked you to bring some pen and paper. It's no time to take it out of your bag, because we will do exercise. And the reason why we will do this is that actually, this is the way that I understood this method. It is by playing with the method. The method is really a method that you don't need a big computer, at least to analyze some small networks, but which already reveal the interest of this kind of analysis. So I will also give you a sort of historical account about René Thomas, since the method is focused on one person. And I learned yesterday that in Indian, the word guru, that we use very frequently in English and in French, but the word guru means professor. And you will immediately see that René Thomas was a guru. He has the typical phenotype. And he was my professor of genetics at the Université Libre de Bruxelles. And as you can see in his history, in his biographic account, he started doing genetics in the early 50s. He is now 85 years old, and still very active scientifically. So he had a first scientific life, I want to say, as a geneticist, where he was involved in the very early beginnings of molecular genetics, in understanding the role of RNA, and this was before the Crick discovery, RNA, DNA makes RNA makes protein, of the messenger RNA and so on. And he was really involved in all these discussions also about regulation between with the groups of Delbrück, Jacob, Monod, and so on. So he was participating to this history of the discovery of regulation, and himself had a group of genetics research at the Université Libre de Bruxelles, and they were focused on bacterial, on phage, actually. They were using phages to understand the genetics of regulation. And some of his students became specialists of the phages. Some other one then diverged towards other fields. They made their thesis on phage genetics, and then they went to Drosophila genetics. And actually, in 89, I had the course by René Thomas, and he was giving a 15-hour course of genetics, which is very short, but it was very bright because he was giving an historical account, and not only was he telling how genetics works, but how do we know that it works. He was explaining the experiments that let people demonstrate that DNA is carrying genetic information, or other types of experiments. So his course was really focused on a very good epistemological approach. And in addition, the last hour of his course, he was dedicating it to explaining how he was now playing with models, mathematical models. And this was just for his fun. But then I came to see him and I said, I want to do a thesis in modeling because I really like this kind of thing. And he told me, you shouldn't do that, because I do not recommend to do modeling before you have done experiments. But, he told me, and I said, I'm interested in nervous system development. And so I asked him, can I apply your method to understand how a nervous system is built from an embryo, where you have a single cell, and then the embryo develops, cells are specified, they take a different phase, and then, even more puzzlingly, they start to natural axons that connect each other, and the fact that each axon connects in the right place is necessary for the functioning of the nervous system. So when I discovered this, when I realized it, because of course all of us know it, but as a student, suddenly I realized that it was completely out of understanding for me how a cell could make something with such a precision. So I naively came to him and said, I would like to understand this, can I use your method? And so he told me, no, you should first make some experiments, but there is incidentally in my group, there are two researchers who are working in Drosophila genetics, and this is how I started to do experiments for which I was very bad, and to do Drosophila genetics. But it was a really, I really acknowledge René Thomas for this, because this really shaped my way of doing science, the fact to know how experiments can work and fail. Now, after that, I followed progressively his group, and so I was also in parallel doing modeling and participating to all the seminars in modeling. But since 1997, I didn't practice it anymore, and I published a single paper in this field. But the method has been developed by René Thomas, and then it has been also taken over by one of his students, Dean Kieffry, and then by several schools of modeling in France. And what I would like to do is to show you how it works. But first, the motivation. Why should you use a method, this method or any other one? I'm not religious for this thing. You already noticed that for some things I can sometimes be a bit exaggeratingly cutting the world in two parts. I think that there are several methods for modeling, and many people use the differential equations, other people use discrete modeling, other people use stochastic, and then people use hybrid methods. And I think that each of these methods reflects quite well some of the properties of living systems. And the best, in my opinion, is to know them and to practice all of them in order to be able to model the same system under different modeling approaches. And this is the case for one of the collaborators, a long-term collaborator of René Thomas, Marceline Kaufmann, that Vidya knows because she was at a meeting where we met. And she is jumping from dynamical, from differential equations to stochastic to logical methods. And I think, for me, she's really an example of how you can combine the best of the different methods. So I will present you one method, not because I think it's the best one for everything. I think it's the best one for certain things, and this is the only one I know. So why should you do some modeling? Because the situation was such, when I was doing my PhD thesis in the early 90s, that René Thomas, who had trained a whole team of a school of geneticists, these geneticists in turn became professors. There were six of them who became professors or researchers in his group. So it was a huge group because each of them had postdocs, PhD students, master students, and so on. So it was it was a 50-person group. But these, when René Thomas switched to mathematical modeling, they didn't follow him, and they were thinking that this was funny, but they didn't understand the use of it. And later, they came to realize that this was something that could help them to understand what they were studying. But at that time, typically, the situation was such that some modelers would come to biologists and say, would you have a nice system for me to model, please? And then the biologist would say, I have a system, but I have my brain, and this is sufficient to understand it. Thank you. And actually, understanding a system, I think that what we want to do when we understand a system is to understand the relationship between what the geneticists are able to characterize, which is basically the interactions on the one hand, and the mutant phenotypes. What happens if you disrupt this gene or this gene or this gene? So this is typically what they have at hand. And on the basis of this, they usually build networks of regulation, networks of interactions representing regulations. Now, once they have that, they use an intuitive way to understand how the network can give the observed behavior and the observed mutant phenotypes. And in some sense, it makes a lot of sense since they induced the network from the sum of their experimental observations. However, you might want to do a bit more, and in particular, instead of simply having the network and understanding that it gives this behavior, you might want to understand which part of the network is responsible for which piece of the behavior. I will show you some examples. And also, but the condition of functionality will come later. So these are very simple networks. And for these simple networks, you don't need to do modeling. If you look at them, the first ones, you have a gene A and it auto-activates. Then it's quite intuitive to say that if the gene is producing its protein, the gene codes for a transcription factor, so the gene expresses the transcription factor. The transcription factor auto-activates. It means that the cell can be in two states. Either the gene is not there, it doesn't express the transcription factor, and so it does not auto-activate, and it stays, the gene stays silent, it is switched off, or it is off, or the gene auto-activates, and then it is on. Slightly more interesting situation is a gene product that auto-represses, and we have many examples of this. And this typically, the gene will be on, but once it is on, it will prevent its own synthesis to grow above a given threshold. So it is it will be an expression that is somehow regulated, and once it starts to be off, then the auto-repression is somehow decreases, and so the gene starts again to express the transcription factor. So this, I can tell you stories like this also about mutual activation or mutual inhibition, and for each of these you will have easily the intuition about what this system can give. But now if you look at the very simple system that you have at the bottom here, this system, which is one of the examples that is treated in René Thomas' book, I forgot to tell you. I have here the Bible. So this is a book that was written in 1989 by René Thomas and Thomas d'Ary and some of his collaborators as well. And actually this book is exposing the method in a very clear way. It's a pleasure to read it. I read it in 90, and then in 1990, 20 years or so years ago, when it was just out, it was published in 90. So just when it was out, I read it. And then I read it the last night again, and it was the same pleasure. I didn't sleep much, but it's a real pleasure to read it. It's exceptional because it's not as dense as in an article. You can really take the time to see how the reasoning is progressing, and he illustrates everything with many biological examples. So I recommend you the book. Now, for this kind of network, I think it's not so obvious to see which situations the systems would evolve towards. Now, I will show you some other examples. This is what I was doing in my thesis. These are my only experiments. So this is Drosophila, and you see that on the back of the Drosophila, you have these bristles. And these bristles are sensory organs. They are nervous, belong to the nervous system, and each of them allows the fly to sense that something is happening here or here or here. So each of the bristles is connected to a precise point in the central nervous system. And the pattern is so precisely defined, determined, and it is determined genetically, there are proofs for that, that the trophophilist or the entomologist, they use the positions of the bristles in order to determine the species of the Drosophila. Among the different species of the genus Drosophila, one way to distinguish them is to look at the pattern of bristles. For Drosophila melanogaster, you always have 11 bristles on each side of the thorax. For other species, you have a bit less, a bit more, or they occupy different positions. Now we have mutants, and this is a mutant for a gene. Single mutant, no, it's a double mutant. It's a double mutant, you mutate two paralogous genes, and the fly can develop, but it has absolutely no bristol on its body. But if you take the same gene and you overexpress it, then you see that there are more bristles than in the wild type. So this is a typical case of a switched gene that will be able to commit the cell into the fate of developing one sensory organ. Now what you can also do is to have the null mutant where the gene is not expressed, and then you do a transgenic fly where you express the gene at particular time points, and when you do so, some bristles are restored. They are restored more or less in the right position, but the particular bristles that are restored depend on the time where you give the heat shock to activate the expression of the proneural genes. So that's a beautiful pattern, and it has been modeled, the genes have been identified, and typically there are two genes, and each of them is auto-activating and activating each other in the same cell. But the situation is a bit more subtle than that, because in addition, the genes are expressed not in a single cell, but as you can see here, this is the imaginary disk that will produce the full fly, and you see that the gene is expressed in a set of cells, and among them only one cell will be sorted out as the sensory organ. And this is ensured by another mechanism, which is that the genes activate a signal molecule, a transmembrane molecule, delta, which will go to the membrane, and it will itself activates a receptor that we heard about during the last talk, Notch, and Notch will repress in turn the expression of the proneural genes in the neighbor genes. So each cell auto-activates the expression of the genes and thus increases its own level of expression and inhibits its neighbors, and thus prevents the neighbor from reaching the threshold that will lead it to the commitment of neural nervous system. So you see that here I already have a network where I can still explain things in with words. It takes more time, but I can understand the relationship between the phenotype and the wiring of the genetic network. Now, this is one of the examples, of the early examples of Monetoma. Not surprisingly, he analyzed the lysogeny and Lysis choice under both for the lambda phage. And this is the network of interaction that they could establish on the basis of the published experiments. Mutant experiment, interactions, epistasis, and so on and so on. So they have a network now. And the way to understand how this network is responsible for the fact that this phage can be in two situations, alternative situations, either in the lytic phase or in the lysogenic phase, is not so intuitive. From that moment, you already start to see the benefits of modeling. And now, this is a system that has one of the systems that has been best characterized in developmental biology. It is the segmentation of the Drosophila. And during the embryonic development, you have a single cell, and then in this cell, there are some RNA that is deposited by the mother, by the mother, and this RNA starts producing proteins. There is no transcription in the early embryo. During about 10 cycles, the cells are dividing, but there is not a single gene which is transcribed. Because on the contrary, this maternal RNA is translated. And this establishes a gradient, anteroposterior gradient, which is then somehow driving the expression of some genes in some particular pieces of the embryo. And these are called the gap genes. They are feeding, for instance, Krüppel is expressed in the middle of the embryo, whereas Giant is expressed at the tail, at the head of the embryo, or at the tail of the embryo, not exactly the head, a bit further than the head, well, in two broad bands. And then these genes, Krüppel and Giant, themselves, they code for transcription factors, and they interact with each other, but also they activate or repress a second wave of genes, which are called the pair rules genes, and these pair of genes are expressed in one segment every two segments, either in the odd segment or in the, well, there are no segments yet. They are expressed in some places, in bands, that will give rise to the segments of the Drosophila, because you know that Drosophila is a segmented organ. And then these genes in turn will activate the next layer of genes, which are the secondary pair rule, I don't enter in the detail. But then you have the segment polarity, which are expressed in half a segment, either the anterior or the posterior side of each segment. So you see, it's a progressive refinement of a pattern of expression. There have been thousands of articles published over this system, and actually, I took here from an article from Denis Trintieffry, a summary of the interactions that are known today, and how do you understand the relationship between what you know, you have the patterns of expressions of the genes, you have many mutant phenotypes, because those genes have been obtained by mutagenesis, and then you have the wiring, because they also made many experiments to know which gene, which factor regulates which gene, which goes for which other factor. So what I mean is that it is clear that once you are confronted to this kind of complexity, you need to scale up with this complexity, and you cannot just simply understand it by looking at the wiring. Now, also one reason for modeling is consistency checking. I could, for instance, discover that with this network, I'm unable to generate the observed behavior, and this tells me that either I have some wrong connections or that some actors are missing. So consistency checking is also one advantage of modeling. And also choosing between alternative models. Sometimes you have several different models that can be chosen because you have some uncertainty about some interactions. But you can then show that one of the models will not give the expected behavior, whereas the other one will. So now, how does the method work? The basic representation is the following. Usually, you can represent regulatory interactions as sigmoids, because generally there is a threshold. And below this threshold, the activator or the repressor is more or less inactive. So here you have an activation. When the A here is the protein coded for by the gene, and we say that when the protein A is at a low level, it is not exerting its activating effect, and then it starts, according to a sigmoid, to activate more and more, and then there is a plateau because at some point you cannot go faster for the synthesis or for many other reasons because the synthesis is balanced by the auto decay and so on. And here you have negative interactions. This can be coded for by the Hill equations. Now the Hill equation, which is classically used in many modeling systems, it has one parameter, which is the exponent. And if you take the smallest exponent, n equals 1, then you obtain an equation that is close to Michaelis-Menten. Whereas if you increase the exponent, you will go progressively to steeper and steeper sigmoids. And if you tend towards infinity, you will end up to a step function, where the effect is either completely absent below the threshold, and this is why we already, by extension, call this a threshold, whereas it is not a threshold. But here you have a threshold, and below this threshold you have absolutely no effect, and above it you have a lot of effect. Sylvia, don't worry, you will have the exercise. Because she really asked me to do a lot of exercises. So this is what René Thomas calls the Boolean caricature. Everybody knows that the genes are not just on or off, but he says that if you do this assumption of on or off state, it will simplify your life, allows you to do things that are somehow reductionist, or more precisely a caricature of the real behavior. But as you will see, then you can come back to the continuous description. There are methods for translating logical methods into differential equations. So the first thing he did was a naive approach, and he started by only using Boolean variables. So in this case, I will show you one example. I take this one because it is not too simple. So I have two feedback loops. Here you see that A auto-activates, so it exerts a positive feedback on itself, but it also A inhibits B, which activates A. It means that when B is there, it will activate A. A will inhibit, repress B, and so B will not be there anymore, and then since B is not there anymore, A is not activated anymore, so it stops, and so on and so on. So in this case, you have a positive loop and a negative loop. The first thing you can say is that each of the genes will be either absent or off. It will be the protein will be off. Then you say that A equals zero, or the protein is on, it is produced above the threshold, and this is what we call A equals 1. That's simple, but then what you need to decide is what is the nature of the relationship between these two arrows. I mean, is it sufficient to have A present in order to auto-activate, or is it sufficient to have B present in order to activate A, or do you need both of them? And actually, this is a logical choice. You must do this choice in the naive approach, and you say, either I can do an AND relationship or an OR relationship. And then, in both of the cases, what you can do is to formulate this interaction graph in terms of a logical equation. And the logical equation, I guess most of you, well, everybody knows the basics of logics, the operators, OR, AND, NOT. Yes? No. Well, anyway, here, A and B, the small a and small b, they represent the level of the product of the gene A and B respectively. This is what I told previously, so this is called the logical variable. Either the gene product is there, A is 1, or the gene product is not there, A is 0. The big A represents the image, which means it is the state that this gene would tend towards if we leave the system in the current, all the active interaction in the current state. So, since I have, in this case, if I say that the logical operation is N, I will say that the gene is turned on, so basically you can see A, the big A, as there is an instruction to turn on the gene small a. So here, when I will say that the condition for having the small gene A turned on is that A and B are present. And the condition for the gene B to be turned on, so the condition to have the function big B equals 1, this condition is that A is not there, so I use the logical notation not A.
Sorry, Jacques.
So far, yeah?
You don't have only choice between AND and OR in number, but also you can imply that. I know that you can't write AND and OR to make imply that.
Absolutely. So The beginning of the book is a course of logic. The first chapter, very short section, but you should read it. And René Thomas shows all the different logical operations that you can do with indeed and or exclusive or and the imply and so on and so on. And he shows how you can obtain them by combining different logical operators. Because I think basically you can obtain any operator by combinations of the operators. So, but the strength of this approach is that you choose the logical conditions that you want to put here. And then you express them in this form of logical operation. And once you have that, you can compute for each possible state of the system what will be its image, which state it should tend towards. So this is done in what is called a state table. So now start the exercise. I will draw the state table of this. This is my exercise. And while I am doing it, in the same time, I will go slow, okay, I will explain each step, but in the same time, with your pen, open your book, please, because after that, one of you will come to explain, I will do a random, let's come back to
real school.
So, I really think that, for me, this is the only way to understand the methodics is to play with it, and so I thought, that might be, of course, nobody is forced to do it, huh? So I propose this, it's a proposal. I will do the state table of the end, the graph with an end, logical relationship, whereas you do it with the or. So you have, everybody has to think about it. And I will do it on the fly. So maybe I should have
Maybe you can hear me like this.
No, I need a microphone.
Yeah.
I can already tell you. Here, in this table, the first thing is to build the first two columns, and these columns represent the state of the product. So is the product present or absent? Okay. So you have four possible combinations because you have two genes and each of them can be either present or absent. So the easiest way to draw it, I will put it dynamically.
Yeah.
Thank you. So the easiest way to work with this is not to work row by row, but to work column by column. So I can say A can be either absent or present. So I put 0, 0, 1, 1. And B, in each of the cases, can be either absent or present. Okay. If I would have three variables, I would say A, B, C, and I say A can be absent or present, B can be absent, present, and C can be absent, present, absent, present, absent, present, absent, present. You see what I mean? So you obtain all the possible combinations of the zeros and ones. Yep. And of course, the number of combinations increases with 2 to the power of the number of elements in the network. So once I have that, I will compute the value of big A. And so it is very simple. Since I have the logical operations, I can consider that the big A is on, so the gene is switched on, anytime I have both the small A and the small B set to 1. So it is very simple. Here, none of them is on, so I say no, 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 yes. This is the only condition under which A will be produced. Not surprisingly, I decided that I had the end condition, but you should do another one. You will have the same thing on this part, but your part should be different here. And now I take B, and the conditions for B being active is that A is not there, and so it is 1, 1, 0, 0. So is it very convenient to work by columns? Because you have just one logical equation in hand at a time. Okay, so now who has the solution? Well, who wants to, who is volunteer to do the state table with the other? The OR operator, because I would like to
rest on here. Does that mean add or A or B? Mm-hmm. In the second case.
No volunteer.
It's OR, yeah. So if either one is one, it's one.
As OR, you come or you leave? As you
want. All right. All
right, done.
Thank you. One good map for Chen.
This must be 0, 1, 1, 1.
Yep.
And that must be the same as that, which is 1, 1, 0, 0.
Exactly.
house, but not
no.
square one.
The next step will be to draw a graph, which is called the graph of states, or the graph of temporal sequence of states. So now the question, I will label my state. So each row is, here I am, the value of the variable at this state, so this is one state of the system, this is another state, another state, another state, I have four possible states. Sorry. Sorry. Should be zero because when A is absent and B is also absent, so B should be zero. First one. Cap B, the first one. Right hand side.
The column for B.
Yeah, first one. It should be 0, 1.
Which one?
No, no. This side. Yeah, the first one should be zero. No, because the condition for B is that A is not there. So here A is absent, so B is on.
But B is also absent. So if B is absent,
doesn't care, because for B there is no act. Okay, so that's good that you asked the question. Because B does not act on itself, and so the fact for B to be present or absent is irrelevant with respect to the synthesis of B. This is why I say you should always draw the table, because when you find some difference, it means that you have to revisit the concept. If I draw very fast all the tables, you will believe everything I see. I must warn you, I very frequently make mistakes. I'm teaching statistics and this kind of stuff. I always make mistakes. And it's not a strategy, it's because I'm a bit absent-minded, but this is very good because the students know that they have to check what I do. And so very often they correct them. So it's part of the pedagogic strategy. I can still use this as a pretext. So now I have four possible states, and for each of them I have the image. So what would be the next state somehow, in a synchronous way, but we will use a slightly more complex way. Now, here I say that zero is off, A is off and it will remain off, but I see that B is off and it should become on. So I say plus, I have an order here, an order, the hand of the seller. I have an order to switch on B, so it should increase. Now I do the same here, and I say that A is off, it should remain off. B is on, it should remain on. This is a steady state. Once the system reaches this state where A is off, B is on, it will stay there. Because B is on, it prevents A, B is, sorry, we can hear the order. It's with the N. If A is absent, it will not be auto-activated, but it will not be activated, it will remain absent. And B, once it is there, since there is no A, it will remain there. Now, the next state is this one, and here I say that A is on, it should become off, so I put a minus here, and here I see that I have I have this one, which is minus. So now, from this, I can draw the succession of states. I say if I start from 0, 0, I have a plus here, which means that the gene Y is, the gene B is, so I have here the level of A, and here the level of B. I have a plus here, means that I will go to increase the level of B, and I will go to 0, 1. Now I go to 0, 1, and I say that if I'm here, I will stay here. Now what if A is 1, so B can be 0 or 1, and A can be 0 and 1, right? So, if no, A is 1, 1, 0 will go to 0, 0. So 1, 0 will go to 0, 0, because there is a minus order here. And 1, 1 will go to 1, 0. So that's a system with single attractor. And in addition, there is here what is called a separatrix. You have a separatrix because you cannot cross this board. Very simple system. Now, I guess you made the same for your graph at the same time. Give you 3 minutes. Who wants a pen? Simon. Okay. Well, I will do it myself. So here I can do the same analysis. And okay. Oh, someone else? Someone volunteer? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So this is really the naive form. Now we have, we can immediately see that we have problems there.
Can I ask a question here? In both of them, you have a unique steady state.
In both situations, you have a unique steady state, which is 1, 0. So where is the question of a separatrix?
Yes, indeed, it's about the separatrix.
It's a separatrix in the subspace. Well, now it looks a bit ridiculous because I have just two, my subspace is very small. But this kind of partial separatrix can exist in higher dimensional spaces, and where it forces you to use a very long way in order to... It's not a, I recognize it's not a separatrix in the proper term. Separatrices we'll see later, true separatrices, where the system has two basins of attraction, and you go either in one or in the other one, indeed. Okay, so this is the dual system. Yeah, indeed. And so the weakness, of course. No, what we see here is that the system is not very interesting. I mean, we are focusing to, we are going to one state. But even with this very simple naive representation, if you take a positive circuit like this one, A activates B, B activates A, then you have two steady states in the system. And I will not redo the demonstration, you can play at home then. But you will have two steady states, and in this case, indeed, you will have a separatrix here. And something which is quite interesting is that mentally, or by imagination, you can still, you see that here, what? Once you're in either of these corners, you will go either to 1-1 or to 0-0. So if you draw mentally a sort of boundary in the middle of the logical box, then you see that there is a sort of separatrix. But also, interestingly, what you have here is a steady state on the threshold. I will not have time to explain you the mathematical formalism of it, but this is part of René Thomas' formalism. It is that you have two stable states, and also, there is a threshold. Usually, at the threshold, there is another steady state which is not stable. It is an unstable steady state. If you are there, you stay there. But if you move a bit, then you go to one of the basins of attractions. And in this basin of attraction, you go to the steady stable state.
I'm sorry, I'm confused again. It seems to me you oscillate between 0, 1 and 1, 0.
No.
I don't understand those.
Because if you're here, you go to 0, 0. Then you say 0, 0.
No, from 0, 1 you go to 1. Which one are you showing now?
Come here. I have two possible choices.
Yeah, but your state table says that from 0, 1 you go to 1, 0.
Ah, very good. Yes. Excellent. Very important.
Indeed. So the image. Excellent question indeed. The image of 0, 1 is 1, 0. So one possibility would be to do what is called a synchronous update. If you do the synchronous update, what will happen is that you will go immediately through the diagonal. So you will go immediately from 0, 1 to 1, 0, and then back from 1, 0 to 0, 1. But this assumes, actually, if you do the synchronous update, René Thomas demonstrated that you will lose a lot of the steady states and a lot of the behavior of the system. And so, what he always do, and all the people who work in this domain do, is asynchronous updates. What does it mean? It means that, actually, if you are in... the model is the following. Actually, if you draw here the axis of time, and then you have the order of switching off the gene which comes here, switching on, you have some delay before it is actually. So this is the delay for activation. Okay, it will take some time. And then, if you give here the order to switch it on off, we'll have also a delay for switching it off, and this delay for inactivation may be longer than the delay for activation, because you have still the protein that is there, it is active, and it is the half-life of the protein which will determine how fast to go. So these two delays are really representing two different phenomena, and there is no reason to believe that they are exactly the same value. And so generally, if you're in such a condition that gene 1 has an order of minus and gene 2 has an order of plus, the times will be different. So they will come first, for instance, they can either have a faster delay of activation for B than the delay of inactivation for A, and then you go this way or the other way. So these time delays, which are in some of the part of the formalism, René Thomas explains how to deal with that and so on. But if you do so, you come back to continuous space and you need to define all the delays in a continuous space. And this starts to be an accounting that is heavy. So generally, we don't do that. We say just that the two possible followers of this state are either zero or 1, 1. So this is the asynchronous update, very important indeed, thanks. Because everything relies on that. Now, if you have another, this is also a positive circuit. It could be a bit surprising at first, because you have only negative interactions. A represses B, B represses A. Nevertheless, the net effect of each element of itself will be positive, because A will prevent B from preventing itself, and B will prevent A from repressing itself. So such a loop is also a positive circuit. And this is a negative circuit because each element has a net effect which is negative on itself. A prevents B from activating itself. B activates A and thus it triggers A for repressing itself. So the general rule is that when you have a circuit, I'm speaking about feedback loops, I should not do that because the term loop is used either to represent a pathway, a closed path, or to represent a self loop, which is a single interaction going from an element to itself. So from now on, I will always use the term circuit, unless I forget, because during a few years we were always speaking about feedback loop, and then we speak about feedback circuits to avoid some confusion that arose. So, this positive circuit, negative circuit, and then we can model each of them. And you see that the two positive circuits will both lead to multistationarity. There are two stable states, and in each case you have a separatrix. You have an unstable steady state in the middle, on the threshold, and then basically either you're in one of the basins of attraction and you will fall to the 0, 1, or you're on the other side of the diagonal and you will fall on the 1, 0. Then the negative circuit is generating a very interesting property, which is a circular behavior. And here you have a focus, actually. And then this is really typical to show that even with very small networks that are just made of two interactions, you can have behaviors that lead to some complexity, either multistationarity or oscillation, which represents this kind of oscillations. Also corresponds to, in biology, to homeostasis. Yes?
I'm fine with the state tables, but then when you have the sequence of... When you go to the sequence of states, how come the same state has two arrows coming out of it? That I couldn't figure out. That was discriminated with the sequential or... simultaneous update?
Exactly. So if you do the simultaneous update, you will have a single arrow that is crossing the diagonal.
Right.
But if you do the asynchronous update, then you have two possibilities because you have two orders under code that are given to this state. The first order for the upper left corner is the 0 should be switched on and the A should be switched on and B should be switched off. And one of these will just reach it before the other one. And this will determine which among the two paths we'll use. Thank you. There is a question.
So I don't understand that. How you can have a focus if you don't have zeros and ones?
Maybe I shouldn't. Well. It's normal that you don't understand it because I still didn't show you something.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, the question is, how can you have a focus if you have only zeros and ones? Indeed, I shouldn't show this at this point because this requires one next step of the formalism, which is to explicitly consider that the threshold is a state by itself. So this is the completely generalized formalism, which includes to explicitly display not only the states which are between threshold, but also the states on the threshold. And this is a very important improvement of the method, and that not many methods that are doing discrete formalism take into account. And Thomas demonstrated that actually all his life, since the book already, each time there is one chapter about discrete modeling, Boolean, and then generalized logical, and then next chapter, the same system modeled with differential equations. And what he showed, and in a further paper as well, is that if you have some systems, in the differential world, you have more complex behavior and more steady states than in the logical world. And he wanted to understand why, and he realized that actually the states that are present in the differential equation and that are absent in the logical, with the differential systems and differential equation systems and absent with the logical equation systems, these steady states correspond to states that are on the threshold, on the logical threshold. And then from then on, he models them. And so instead of having two states here, you would have three states, zero, one, or just on the peak, on the threshold. Now, something also I wanted to know, to show you is one of the chapters of his book, because what I showed you till now is that if you... 5 minutes now.
Ten minutes,
okay. Good, thank you. So what I wanted to show you, you will skip some exercises, I will leave them for homework. So, because this is the first talk, I had a second one then about network motifs and blah blah blah. Okay, so, now, induction. So one possible utilization of the method is that instead of starting from a network of wiring, which usually big geneticists they can have because they have mutant phenotypes and so on, epistasis analysis and so on. But it can be applied also in a completely reverse order, where instead of starting from the network and simulating the behavior in order to see what are the possible steady states and the possible phenotypes of the end of the network, what you can do and is to start from a description where you know the path, where you know the states of the systems, and you know the path of you know that in this system you go from one state to another one, then to another one, and so on and so on. And so you know the behavior, but you don't know the network. And then he proposed a method that he called inductive, or an inductive approach, which is to use exactly the same approach, but and he illustrates it with a very nice oscillatory behavior in the nervous system of the leech, I think, where you have four neurons that are interconnected, and these four neurons are activated periodically, but with a phase shift between each of them. And so he starts from this description, where the horizontal axis displays the time, and the vertical axis shows the four neurons. A, B, C, D are the four neurons, and at each time you have a box that represents the phases where it is active. And then from this he can draw vertical lines telling at this time point I have A active and all the other one inactive, so I have 1 0 0 0, and then from there I go here and I have 0 1 0 0, and so on. So what you can do is to draw, no, you first have 1 1 0 0, then 1 0, and so on. So he's cutting this in slices and drawing the path of states. And from this path of states, what he can say is which is the follower of each state. So he builds the incomplete state table. Here you have all the possible states, and here you have only the states that you find in this loop. And then the other one, he says, we don't know. Well, anyway, the system does not go through this stage. But then what we can do is to try to infer a network that will have this behavior. And so, here he used Carnot map. He explains how to do it, so all the recipes are in the book. But he uses Carnot map, which consists in drawing here all the possible states and surrounding by a square what you observe in this logical table. And then from there, he infers logical equations. He induces logical equations, and he tries. There are many possible ways to make a box that will take all the ones, none of the zeros, plus some of the minus here. And he decides to take the most economical one, the one that can be explained in the simplest term. This is a choice that you can really argue, because the simplest network that generates a behavior may not be the actual network. But anyway, you don't know the network. And so, from then on, he says, okay, this network, so here you have the logical equations that are induced from there, and then he induces this network, and he can then demonstrate that this network indeed would lead to the behavior that you observe in this siege. Now, one interest of this method, and it's a particularly interesting thing today, the drawback is that it is not because you found the simplest network or even another network that generates this behavior that there are many networks that can generate the same behavior. So it doesn't tell you much about your system. However, in the context of today, for synthetic biology, this is very powerful. I showed you a very simple example, but if you have more variables and you have a more complex fixations of behavior, you can always infer a logical network that is supposed to drive this behavior. And then you can start doing constructions like Leibler did, and actually in the reference theater, he was citing René Thomas, because René Thomas did this kind of stuff during 40 years in the computer. He also tried to do the experiments with some master students, but never succeeded. And the first one who succeeded was Leibler, who built synthetic organisms, bacteria, in which you insert three genes that are wired in such a way that it generates oscillations or multistationarity and so on. So this was the birth of what is now called synthetic biology. Now, I would just like, if you leave me 5 minutes, to show you that the method is not so rudimentary as I showed you, because one very strong simplification here that we made in the naive approach is that each variable is on or off. But there are many cases where a gene can activate or repress several targets, and it will do so at different thresholds. A very typical example is the interpretation of a gradient, like I showed you in the Drosophila. But in the dorsoventral gradient, you have dorsal, which activates twist and snare, but at different threshold values. And here you know the threshold values. So you can indeed order them. You can say, OK, I know that my gene represses this gene at a low level. Then if I increase the level of gene X, it will also auto-activate. And if I increase it yet to another level, it will also activate gene Z. But the problem is that usually you don't know the orders of the threshold. You have the wiring when you have a genetic circuit. Generally, the people, they show the arrows, but they don't tell you if one gene activates or one factor activates several genes or represses several genes. You don't know which one is activated at a lower threshold or a higher threshold. So one possibility is to test all the possibilities. So in this case, just for one gene which activates three targets, I have six possibilities. Then if I have N genes in my system, you will have, of course, an explosion of the complexity of the number of networks that you need to analyze. So that's one difficulty. But generally, you try to combine everything you can catch out of the experiments that tells you that likely this effect occurs before this one in terms of thresholds, and then the rest, you can still do the model choice by testing different models, different ways of ordering the thresholds. Next one, what he did is to define multiple thresholds. So he says, I have multiple thresholds. And then another thing, it is these logical operators, because instead of doing logical operator, there was an extension which consists in choosing what he calls logical parameters, which is a parameter that expresses the strength not only of each interaction, but of each combination of interactions. So here, for instance, when A auto-activates and B activates A, what you can have is the weights. Well, you can do a table where you first describe which of the regulations are active for A. So if you have 0, 0, none of the regulation is active. If you have 0, B, then 0, 1, then only B is activating A. If you have A at the level 2 and B at the level 1, B at the level 1, then I have both A and B which activate A. So I can describe the list of interactions that are active, and then once I have this list, I can assign a weight to each possible combination of active interactions. And this is what is called a generalized logical formalism. And René Thomas demonstrated that if you do this, but in addition you have just one thing, which is the threshold state, then you can mimic, you can obtain more or less the same you can obtain the same results as in the differential equation system in terms of identifying all the steady states. The advantage is that you can do it analytically. In the simplest case that is, you can not only find the steady states, but you can define which are the conditions on the weights of the interactions that would give a steady state or not. And so this is very strong. It's a strong thing because the method allows you to analytically determine the bifurcation parameters. You can say that if this parameter takes value 0 or 1, then the feedback loop will be active and I will have multistationarity. Whereas if it takes value 2, then I break the feedback loop and I don't have the multistationarity anymore. So, to finish, the main contributions of Fanetoma also to this domain was that, here I have a beautiful example from his book where I show that with the same, he shows that with the same network, depending on the weights that you will put, you will either obtain a separate trick here, a real one, with one steady state on one side and another one on the other side, or you can have a separate trick with one steady state and then a cyclic behavior with a focal point on the threshold, and then you can also have many different situations. There are also several orders. So generally, you don't want to enumerate all the possible situations. What you want to do is to find the one that corresponds to your phenotype, and this you can do with this analysis of the constraints of parameters. There are many other things to tell about it, because this is a 40 years work. And the last thing is that indeed, the main contribution of Fanetoma here was also to demonstrate that if you want to have multistationarity, it is a necessary condition to have a positive feedback loop. And if you want to have oscillatory behavior, it is a necessary condition to have a negative feedback loop. And then he could show also that you can combine them to obtain more complex systems, including chaotic systems and so on. So this is one important contribution. It has been demonstrated 3 times separately by different mathematicians with different levels of generalization, even now in the level of continuous differential equation. And there is a parallelism very easy between the matrix of interactions where you can find all the feedback loops and the for the people who are doing a differential equation, the Jacobian of the matrix of the Jacobian of the system. There is really a one-to-one correspondence between the interactions that you put in the interaction graph and the Jacobian of the matrix. So thank you for your attention. Obviously, I would need a few more hours to give a full course on Fanetoma. It was just to give you a sort of sketch of the kind of questions you can address and the level of generalization. But you will find more. And what I did is to put all the articles that I collected, that I received from Denis Thieffry, the student of Fanetoma. And I placed it on a website, and there is a password and a login because, I don't have the copyright on these articles. I can use it and distribute them for teaching, but not put them on the web. So you are welcome to go there. Since this is a teaching circumstance, I have the right to distribute to the PDF. Thank you.
Too, I wanted to run away when I looked at those numbers, but I think my life deal with numbers. But my question to you is, how do you integrate post-translational changes that might modify the function of a protein? All I see here is A upregulates B, but if a function on A needs, for instance, a phosphorylation, how does your model account for that?
You can do that. The method has also been used for modeling metabolic pathways, for instance. It is a bit more complex. It is explained in some article how you can do that. Because actually, one of the simplifications of the method is that you replace supposed sigmoid interactions by infinitely steep sigmoid interactions, which means step functions. And first reactions such as phosphorylation, I'm not sure that you can model them with a little off. Yes, probably, it's probably fine. So there is no problem, I think. But the second, you can really use the system to model anything. Some people used it in psychology. Some other people used it in economics, the René Thomas methodology, and they came to visit him and to discuss with him about the applications of his method. So anytime you have a wiring between elements, you can represent it with this. It will not work, when all the interactions are purely linear, then it will fail to represent the real behavior of the system. But when all the interactions are linear, the system is somewhat not very interesting, I think. I'm not sure about that, but I think that it's not a very interesting system. On the other hand, what René Thomas showed also is that if you have a system made of almost all linear interactions, but just 2 or 3 very non-linear interactions, then you can use the logical formalism and use this simplification to represent everything as on or off, and you will have similar behaviors in the logical and in the differential representations. As soon as you have some non-linearity in the system, you throw a bit of paper of non-linearity in the system, then the method is varied. If you have purely linear, then you can forget this method and you go to linear modeling.
Just touch
you go back to the slide where you had shown the lambda regulator.
Towards the beginning.
Don't ask me questions about lambda
changes. I just want to know whether the model has been consistent with what is known for.
These are interactions that you can measure by experiments, but if you disrupt them, the mutant phenotype will not be different. And so he shows it in the complete graph, and then when he does the modeling, he somehow either puts a low weight on these interactions or he suppresses it from the graph.
Can you put the mic close?
Yeah. So, but there is no evidence to show that C2 positively regulates Rho.
This is explained in the book. The only thing, I don't know the lambda analytics, I don't know anything about it. The system that I know is Drosophila because I used to work on it. I just showed this was to illustrate that first it was one of the first examples that René Thomas had chosen, and that even in a case where you have four genes, the complexity of the system is such that I couldn't figure out what are the possible steady states of such a system by just looking at the wiring diagram. Yeah, but I don't know anything about
lambda. Just a comment, this does not show C2 positively regulating flow. Where does it show that?
That arrow, maybe I misunderstood.
It shows a negative regulation.
No, sorry. In this representation, I used the different symbols at the end of the arrows, but here there is a sign. You see, in the book, he used a minus or a plus. So what this shows is that crow represses C2, and C2 exerts some weak repression on crow, but apparently you can suppress it from the system.
Yeah, but from what I have read, there is no effect of crow on C2, either positive or negative.
It is possible, but I guess that if René Thomas put it there at the moment when he was doing phage genetics, it is at least that there were some papers showing that. No, it is possible that in the meantime, this regulation has been contradicted, I don't know, but I mean, I really don't know anything about it, and
Yeah.
It was just a comment that people always say, oh, linear equations are too simple, nothing special, and non-linearity is where it is. Just a comment that the quantum mechanics is a linear system, is a linear equation, the Schrodinger equation. The electromagnetism, the Maxwell equations are linear. I mean, just don't use the word linear and non-linear as some humanitarian complexity or not. Like, you have many examples of linear equations which go well or not.
Thank you. I take it for granted. I will not tell it anymore.
I have a question.
Can you take the microphone?
No, I can shout. Within a certain approximation, you can treat genes as being on or off.
Yes.
Now, that is the approximation which seems to suit these logical networks best. Is that right?
No. This was the first approach that he developed, but then he realized that this is insufficient. Because if you just consider them as on or off, you fail to represent the cases where a gene has several targets, or a transcription factor, or a regulator, whatever it is, has several targets, but activates the targets at different thresholds. And so the rule when you have several targets is that you need at most, in this case, some people who do discrete modeling, they said, okay, I will have a scale with between 0 and 10. And when you have three interactions, there is no need for having a scale that goes between 0 and 10, because you can capture all the possible behavior with a scale that goes between 0 and 3. If you have three interactions, you need three thresholds, and then this makes four possible values. 0 means that the gene is inactive for all of its outgoing interactions. 1 means that it is sufficiently expressed at a sufficient level to activate the first interaction, but not for the next ones, and so on.
Have people tried a sort of modular scheme where you can coarse grain the network in some way so that you can then put together the constituent parts in a simpler framework. Instead of having to draw the state space of all n nodes, whether you can decompose the graph into modules which you can then recombine.
Yes, there was some work, I don't know it very well, but one of the things that you can do is that the big focus that René Thomas placed on this is that finally, when you want to analyze the system, you don't even need to do this whole state tables and so on. What you need to do is to enumerate the feedback circuits. For each of these feedback circuits, you can identify one steady state. You know, the unstable steady states that I showed you, there is a method to identify it analytically. And once you identify it, you can see whether the feedback loops are disjoint or if they are joined. If they are disjoint, then you can decompose the system into subsystems. As soon as the feedback loops are disjoint, you can decompose already the system into what would be called modules, I think. Even though the modules will act on each other, but if there is no feedback loop between two modules, then it's fine. You will first model the first module, and then you have its outgoing interactions. And typically, this is what Denis Thieffry and Lucas Sanchez made for the Drosophila. Actually, Lucas Sanchez, he's a geneticist, a Drosophila geneticist, and he found this book of René Thomas. He read it, and then he came to Brussels, and he said, this is exactly what I need, because now I'm analyzing systems that I cannot understand anymore. It's really a biologist who came to René Thomas and said, I want to do this. And then he started working with Denis Thieffry. The first paper that I contributed also was on the dorsal ventral segmentation, but this was in 97. And then every 2 or 3 years, they would segment, they would analyze, and I was not involved in that, but then they would first analyze the gap genes. And then they analyzed the next layer, the segment polarity. And then they analyzed the pair rule, and then the segment polarity. And they went down to the more complex part of the network. But this is a several years work. It's a beautiful, really beautiful work. It has been published, and you have the PDF on the website. But this is, I think, an exact illustration of what you suggest, which makes a lot of sense. It is to decompose the big network into modules, and the rule, really operational rule for being able to do that, is that as soon as you don't disrupt feedback circuits, then you are somehow allowed to decompose the network. But if you disrupt one feedback circuit, and if this feedback circuit is efficient, then your model will not reflect anymore the behavior of the system.
But the trick is, the real question is, how do you combine the modules in the presence of they being coupled by feedback circuits?
Okay, so this is another...
So
the question is not so much how I cut the system into modules that I can analyze separately because it's too complex, but the question is rather, how do you combine modules in order... this is exactly the field, if you are interested, where there is a lot of development to be done, because now what has been very well characterized is the steady state of a system, the steady state of a circuit. In a more recent paper, Kaufman and Thomas, they developed the concept of full circuit or something like that, which means it may be a conjunction of circuits that include all the variables of the systems. But now what really needs to be done is to understand how different feedback circuits, when they combine, what are could we find rules that help us to predict that if you combine two positive loops that are this way and one negative that is in this way, then you can generate this type of behavior. The combinatorics of feedback circuits is really, I think, one of the most challenging questions in this field.
Well, there's nothing else. Thanks, Alicia. And we have...